So can you just please all give us a basic introduction and what you do with Canadian Crossroads International?
We all worked for different organizations. Okay. I volunteered with CCI, and then in Ghana, I volunteered with sister company with them, or an organization, was Ubuntu for Development. It's an organization that specializes in getting women more involved in politics and knowing their rights.
For me, I was with ProLink in Ghana. That's another partner organization with CCI. So basically, I was sent there to transfer the business skills and knowledge that can be sustained by the women groups there.
My name is Candace O'Grady, and I'm the Communications Officer for Canadian Crossroads International. We are an international development organization, and our main areas of focus are in women's rights and sustainable livelihoods, which essentially means helping people to create decent work for decent pay in Africa and Bolivia. We work in 8 different countries in Western Africa, Southern Africa, and in the Andean region of South America.
What is happening in these countries in which you're volunteering? Why do all your organizations feel a need to have a presence in these countries?
Well, I guess what I would say first is that, just to make the structure clear, so Canadian Crossroads International is based in Canada, and we work with local organizations in Africa and in South America to do development work. So the organizations that Jiyoung and Amy worked with are our partner, two of our partner organizations on the ground in Ghana. And the reason we're working in these countries in particular are because we have really excellent and often long-standing relationships with leading organizations in women's rights and poverty reduction. We've been working in the field of international development and volunteer cooperation for over 50 years, and the countries we're currently working in are those with whom we have the strongest relationship and where we see the greatest impact of our work.
Okay, can you guys give us any specific examples of what you do?
Okay, so for example, I was a woman entrepreneurship trainer. I worked in 2 different towns in the rural area of Ghana. Mm-hmm. So I worked with 8 groups of 15 to 25 women who needed some business skills training. So I helped them teach cash flow, journal entry, how to record their inventory so that they can get track of, you know, how much they have and how many products are going out. Mm-hmm. So that you know that nothing is being stolen. I also helped them create group businesses. So some of the groups, they started batik, tie-dye, dairy processing, and palm oil processing. So I helped them start and plan group businesses so that they can earn extra income for themselves.
Okay.
And I wrote and reported to Ubuntu regarding environmental innovations, as well as situations that were currently going on within Ghana, the Ghana context. And also I trained the staff in doing desktop development work, so Photoshop, like things that would be useful towards their organization if they ever decide to do their own like graphic design work.
Right. So how can you compare and contrast the struggle for rights for women in developed countries versus developing countries? Like here we already have access to things like Photoshop and legal aid, and I assume in developing countries they don't readily have access to that kind of thing.
Well, if I could take a gamble at that question, I find as if this is really my opinion and what I experienced from it, that we have a social system here. So we have laws in place, and then there's a social system that backs women up, essentially. So if you get beaten by your husband, for example, there are places to turn to. They have laws in place currently in Ghana. However, they do not have that social system. It's mainly because they'll have family to turn to, but not this network of like aid to turn to.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that?
As for me, I think the law the strength of the law between developed countries and developing countries. There is difference, but I think the issues like domestic violence, less women being part of politics, that's still an issue both in developing and developed countries. That's what I realized while living there. So like gender inequality is an issue in both developed and developing countries, right, I find. Yeah.
Yes, I would agree that I think the struggles of women across the world are similar, that they run in parallel, but I think it is a matter of degree. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about in terms of some of the groups of beneficiaries we work with in countries in West Africa, like Ghana, is that they do not have access to basic rights, to basic freedoms, to basic opportunities that the majority of women in Canada do. Not all. There are groups in Canada that continue to be far more marginalized than others. So what we try to do through our work is to build capacity of local women and of local organizations to harness opportunities, to increase self-confidence, to increase leadership skills, to increase their financial independence. And this is a really holistic approach to development work. It's not piecemeal, because we recognize that in order for women to live out the fullness of their potential, in order for women to really harness their rights, they need to have a whole variety of different opportunities in place. There needs to be a change in certain social attitudes and cultural values. They need to have the financial independence to stand on their own feet if they need to leave an abusive relationship. They need to have the laws and people who will take their cases to the courts if they are experiencing abuse. And they need to have decent work so that they can support their children and their family, so they have water to drink, so they have food to eat. So it's really a matter of addressing women's rights at the root causes of inequality.
Also, the whole gender inequality, you can really see it by the behaviors of women. Mm-hmm. When I was training, it was really a discussion based. So I asked them questions about themselves. I asked them, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Just to figure out their capacities. And when I asked questions, the women, they were very shy. And they weren't, it was to speak up, because they weren't really used to expressing themselves in public. So there's something like that. And I lived with three Ghanaian host families. And one host family, I could see the whole gender inequality within a family too. So for example, this family, they were living in a very rural area, so they were very traditional mm-hmm. Ghanaians, and the mother would not let any boys enter the kitchen, because kitchen is a place for a woman, right, not for boys. So very small things like that I saw in behaviors of women really represents the whole mm-hmm. inequality. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I noticed you guys talk a lot about like empowering women at the source, at the root of where these things happen. So why do you think that tools and things like that are important? Why is it more important to educate women to help themselves?
Like when I was training the women groups, the first thing that the women group expected was actually money.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, no, I do not have money. I came here with zero cash. And people were very disappointed when I said this at the beginning of the training session. But the point that I wanted to, that I emphasized to the women is that they need to make income for themselves so that they can sustain that income on their own instead of being dependent on outside, income. Exactly. So I really focused my work on motivating them and giving them confidence that they can earn their own income themselves. And I think that's the best way for developing countries to sustain themselves.
Mm-hmm. And to expand on Jiang's answer to an organizational perspective, that really gets at the heart of the approach that Canadian Crossroads International has to development work, and it's that we're really invested in lasting solutions. We're not interested in one-off projects. We're trying to improve and change people's lives for the long term. And how we think the model for doing that is through partnership. We try and be a place where ideas and needs meet. So that includes ideas from the South, ideas from the North, and people from every corner of the globe. So we try and bring people together to create lasting solutions that will remain in communities long after the initial project is finished. So for example, in West Africa, particularly in Niger and Mali, for thousands of years, women have collected shea nuts to make butter and oil. And that was a traditional task that women did in communities. So in both of those countries, we're helping women to leverage shea butter from traditional women's work into a viable group business. So they come together as small groups, they form a cooperative, and then together they sell butter in much larger quantities to markets, to external markets internationally or nationally. So that's one example of finding, you know, of having women take a task that they're already experts in, that they already know how to do, and just transforming it in order to make it, in order to turn it into decent work. Another example is we're extremely involved in microloans and communal banks in Bolivia. And a lot of the communal banks the primary members are women. And what that does is it enables them to pool little bits of money. Every person puts a little bit of money into a communal bank, and then over time they're able to take out larger and larger loans to support agriculture or other small businesses that they're involved in, and over time their investment increases, and they actually are able to invest in social programs like schools or health clinics. And all of these ideas come from the communities, and that's how they create real change over time.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be like a strong kind of push for legal education, like business legal education, to help these women. So why is it important to have the legal aspect and like the legal political aspect of this education as well?
Well, I mean, it's important to have the legal aspect of it because it can't be done without any structure, the initiative isn't going to be completely forced without so.
We push for more women to participate in election, right? To run an election.
Yeah.
For more women to represent and to speak behalf of women. I think in Ghana, too, if there were more female politicians, they can speak out more for women's rights.
To me also there's like it seems to be very much of a like you were adding before of a culture barrier,
right?
That opposes for women to be in the kitchen or for women to stay in the kitchen while men are not necessarily allowed to. So having this sort of legal base allows women to legally be able to do so. However, you might have to go over that little hump of cultural barriers.
Yeah, I think that what the law does, what legal education does, is it allows us to move women's rights from the page to reality. It allows us to move it from theory to practice. So you have in the letter of the law that women are equal, and then you know, fulfilling that law requires women to stand up for their rights, to go to court, and in order to do that, they need to know what their rights are. Rights are no good if they stay on the page. It doesn't matter how many constitutions say that women and men are equal. If women don't know that it's a crime for a man to physically or sexually abuse them or to take their money or to keep their daughters out of school, it does us no good. So educating women about their rights and really encouraging them to use the law to claim their rights and to increase their equality, that is what changes a law to being a living right.
My next question was going to be, why do you think it's important for women to be able to govern themselves?
Because men and women have a different perspective of things. I mean, in, like, what are you going to know what, if the women are usually the ones that are taking care of children, then what are you going to know what would be best, how to best take care of your child, for example?
Yes, I agree. I think Ursula Franklin, this Canadian scientist, talks a lot about, Canadian scientist and feminist, talks a lot about asking different questions. And she talks about how even in the field, how in the field of science, women ask different questions and therefore come to different answers. And I would say it's the same thing about politics. They have a different role in the family, they have a different role in society, and a different role in their communities. And that means that they bring different priorities to the political field. In Ghana right now, fewer than 10% of politicians at both the local and the national level are women. In the there were local elections last year in Ghana, and a project that was supported by the YWCA Canada and Canadian Crossroads International helped furnish women candidates in rural areas with bicycles so that they could canvass and campaign in the surrounding very remote rural communities. And three of the 10 women who participated in that program were elected to office. So that we felt that that was a really great success. And we certainly, we have programs in Ghana. We have a major program in Senegal. We have local politicians in Montreal pairing with local politicians in Medina in Senegal. And they're currently they're doing exchanges between the two countries to help build capacity and to share experiences about being women politicians, to share lessons and to try and inspire each other. So I think that absolutely having women in political leadership will change political priorities, it'll change laws, and it'll change the lives of families and communities across any country.
Okay. Can you guys share your experiences with us?
Every day when I was there in Ghana, I've always faced some sort of behaviors that were like cultural behaviors that we could see that gender inequality still exists. Like, for example, before I left to Ghana, I was trained at a cultural cultural training not to drink beer or you know, or be even out with a man alone. So things like that, in terms of behavior.
Sort of though, I found in like Accra, everything, like it was quite somewhat normal, but if you were in rural areas, then those rules would stand more so.
So was there a big difference between the rural areas and the suburban areas?
Yes. For me, I stayed in Accra, the capital city, for about a month, and then I left to the rural areas for about 3 months. And like before I left to Ghana, I pictured Ghana as a very developing country without like much development. So I ended up having some trouble with clothing.
It's like a
for example,
shock.
Yeah, for example, like I lived with a family that was that could be richer than me. Yes. And then I was invited to a wedding the first day, and I didn't bring any heels or dresses. And the daughters who I went to the wedding with, they were dressed in very fancy dresses and really, really high heels. So the Ghana that I imagined before I left was very different, but in rural areas, it's different. It's different than Accra, but Accra is it's not as developed as Toronto, but you see many buildings, people with cars, like
yeah. I think it's a development.
Yeah, and Ghanaians, they always complained that people outside of Ghana, people in developing countries think that, you know, they are very, very underdeveloped, right. But they are not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amy, you were working with a Bantu, is that right?
That's yeah. Correct, yes.
And you were working, can you just refresh my memory what you were working?
I was working as a desktop development advisor.
Okay.
And so what I did was basically I was a technology sort of background, and I'd help them and train their staff in how to use like desktop development software in order for them to do their own publications. Well, I think it's important because it gets them less dependent on their external staff in order to do their work, and then they get to see how it develops from themselves. It also gives them, the different technologies that they can use, so it'll be more viable for them if they ever choose to go into a different field.
So recently we had the executive director of one of our partners in Swaziland visit. Her name is Sabile, and she runs an organization called the Swaziland Action Group Against Abuse. And Crossroads' work with them surrounds girls' empowerment clubs. And this is one of the biggest success stories that we have in development work. Girls' empowerment clubs were originally pioneered by our partners in Zimbabwe. And about a year ago, we transferred that model both to Halifax, Nova Scotia, as well as to Swaziland. And it's a model of creating a safe space for girls, and particularly in Swaziland, where they can learn about their rights, where they can learn about abuse, and they learn tools for addressing violence. And when Sabile came to visit, she told us that the results were absolutely astounding. So the clubs serve girls, they're run out of schools, and they primarily serve girls who are in primary school and high school. And she said that already after 1 year, teen pregnancy rates have dropped by almost 50%, that girls are showing a much higher understanding of the fact that diseases like HIV and AIDS are contracted through sex. And this is incredibly important in Swaziland because it's actually the country with the highest rate of HIV and AIDS in the world. So knowing your rights, knowing that it's a crime for someone to sexually assault you, is a matter of life and death for these girls. Mm-hmm. And in the clubs, one of the large portions, one of the ways that they help to build girls' confidence and leadership skills is through drama and poetry, which also really serves as a way for healing because such a tremendous number of girls have experienced sexual or physical abuse. By the age of 18, 1 in 3 girls in Swaziland will have experienced abuse. And the results are tremendous. It's changing the lives of girls. And what's so powerful about this model is that it's girls changing their own lives. All they need is a safe space and a trusted adult leader to teach them about their rights, to help them build that self-confidence, to help them understand that if they're victims of violence and abuse, it's not their fault. And they will change their world, and they will change the world.
In terms of volunteering or getting involved, like Jiyoung and Amy, how did you guys hear about Canadian Crossroads, and how did you guys get involved with it?
Like right after I graduated, I graduated from business school, so I wasn't a student from international development or relations, but I was always interested in women's rights issue, so I wanted to bring my business skills to the women's rights movement, and I found that CCI recruits people with business skills to help empower women. So that's how I decided to work with CCI, and I found CCI through a website of International Youth Internship Program run by Canadian International Development Agency.
Okay.
Yeah, I found this position through the same website. Like, I have a similar story in terms of I didn't have a background in women's studies or of that sort, but I did have a background in print publication and a degree in urban planning. And CCI's mandate altogether, it was just inspired me, so I wanted to get more involved in it. So anything that I could do, I wanted to do.
Okay, and how would you recommend for other people, like graduates, volunteers, anyone to get involved? How would they go and get involved with it?
The best way to do that is just to check our website. So it's our URL will be changing within the next few months to Crossroads International, but it's currently our acronym, so it's CCIORG.ca, and we always have we recruit year round, and our postings are always on our website, and they're essentially like job descriptions. So we're looking for Canadians with specialized skill sets to really advance the work of partners on the ground. So we definitely, you know, we definitely encourage anyone who's interested to take a look.
Okay, and for all three of you, is there anything else you would like to add before we wrap this up?
Oh, I just want to add, the program, it's not only just for graduates, it's also for professionals who can bring their skills to developing countries. And everything is covered, so there, it's not like other organizations where you have to pay thousands of money just to volunteer for a few weeks. This is an actual volunteer where you bring differences. So yeah, every flight, accommodation, meals, everything was covered while we were there.
Right. So how would you rate your experiences with Canadian Crossroads?
Well, great. I learned a lot while I was there, going through the whole culture shock, while living with, host families. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did really appreciate that. We had an introduction session, and then we also had a debriefing session just to make sure that you're okay and to share experiences. That was extremely helpful. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I guess that takes us to the end, and I want to thank everyone for coming in today. Thanks for taking time out to talk to us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Okay,
thank you,
Young and Amy.
All right, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.